If he can speak. Warren Ingram, who's a personal financial advisor, executive director at Galileo Capital, because you know my nails are very important to me. Market timing, Warren Ingram, market timing. Do tell me about this concept of market timing, please.
I can't believe we're starting a conversation with talking about nails on the Money Show. It's got to happen sometime, I guess.
Hey, it's big business. Nail, well, it used to be big business. It will be once again one day, I'm sure.
So, I thought, you know, when we look at this market cycle that we've seen so far, it feels like, you know, if we go from the beginning of the year to now, you know, it's 5 months that feels like an entire market cycle of 5 or 7 years. And I thought it's probably worth just looking at what happens to investors who try to get clever in these times and you know, and try and do things in a newfangled way or try and time the markets or now with a little bit of hindsight, what happens if you'd just been in shares or just been in cash? Because I think, you know, what's interesting about market conditions like we've got is that because they're so extreme and because everyone feels that this time it's really different, they follow the news more. They tend to listen to people like me much more and give us much more credit than they should, you know, as if we've somehow got a crystal ball that no one else has got. And so they tend to change an entire investment strategy based on, you know, a few days or weeks of news and often to their detriment. So if we look at what's happened, I mean, we've had a really dramatic market drop worldwide and then a very, very significant recovery after that. And you know, to some point, I think probably to the end of Friday, you know we've had the sharpest drop and then recovery in American stock market history. South Africa, not exactly the same in terms of the size of the drop and the potentially the size of the recovery, but we've had really major events, and it would have been, I argue, impossible to call that kind of a recovery. Now, I can remember answering lots of phone calls and emails and tweets about Sasol when Sasol's share price was collapsing, and people saying, you know, shouldn't we buy, and then the price halved again, and people saying, you know, shouldn't we buy now, and my comment was the same, is I think that the debt on that business was so enormous that, you know, to buy, you know, you could make a great profit from the really low levels, but potentially the debt would derail the business, and obviously we've seen it have a huge jump in share price from the big lows.
But the thing is, you see, what's important here, Warren, is that the share price didn't just move. It wasn't just a case of it fell, and then it's turned around and then it went up again. A lot changed in the world in a really quick period of time, just as on the downside, a lot was changing. The company had lots of fundamental issues and does still have those fundamental issues. Those haven't gone away. The debt is still significant. The project management on Lake Charles in Louisiana is still a big problem. They've still got massive structural problems within the business of Sasol. What did change, however, was the oil price. And once the oil price started moving, suddenly there was this, again, over-exuberance, as maybe there'd been too much pessimism on Sasol. There was an over-exuberant response. And we've seen in the last 2 days that pullback come straight back into oil producers around the world, but particularly into Sasol too.
Exactly, and I think there, you know, probably there's a lot more at play than we sometimes see. You know, for example, I can't help wondering how many hedge funds that have been potentially selling Sasol shares short, you know, trying to profit from further losses in Sasol, have been caught, you know, by that initial rise in the oil price, which caused the initial jump in Sasol's price, and suddenly all of these short sellers had to cover their short positions. I know that's quite technical, but basically they had to start buying a heck of a lot of shares that they'd borrowed and sold from somebody else. And I wonder if that has caused a significant jump in the price as well. Those are the kinds of sort of arcane movements in shares that we won't really necessarily know about until we start reading about big hedge funds that have collapsed, in the months and weeks ahead, or weeks and months ahead. And then they'll start telling us that they were shorting Sasol and got caught out. So I think there's a lot of that kind of movement happening all the time. And I just think, you know, all we need is the Saudis to kind of get fed up with cutting their production and start to increase production again. And we watch this oil price, you know, fall over again and watch Sasol's share price fall over again. And so that kind of volatility is just, you know, it is extraordinary. And for people trying to time all of this, I think it's crazy. So what I looked at doing, I try to get some numbers crunched to see what happens to investors in this time. And my first thing is, one of the things we talk about consistently is just get a nice diversification of your assets. You know, don't have all your eggs in the money market. Don't have all your eggs in the share market, and certainly not all in the bond market. You know, try and have a nice split. And in the investment world, you know, a generic mix is somewhere around 60% in shares and 40% in bonds. And so I thought, well, let's have a look at what happened in South Africa and overseas if you had that kind of a mix. And we start January, 1st of January, you have your money in that. And let's just say you had 100 grand or 100,000 or 100 million, it doesn't matter, but let's just say 100 grand in that. What happened when the world really fell apart? And that's somewhere around 23rd of March. Your 100 rand was worth about 72 rand in South Africa. And if you'd been in the stock market alone, your 100 rand was around about 65 rand. So you've lost a heck of a lot more money just being in shares over that time. And if we look at it now, to the end of Friday, unfortunately, I haven't been able to crunch numbers. You know, my calculator doesn't work that fast. So we're up to Friday now. And to Friday, your 100 rand in a balanced portfolio gets you around about 98 rand. So nearly 99 rand. So basically, you're almost square again. And with 100% in shares, you're at about 96 rand. So that doesn't sound like a heck of a difference, but we're talking about a very short space of time, and for people, especially those who are retired, you know, if you were drawing your money from shares, you know, you're drawing when it's down, 35%, and that's a heck of a drop to be drawing on, and it happens somewhere towards the end of the month of March, which is typically when people would have been drawing on their money. And so, being in a pure equity portfolio and trying to time the markets there, you would have felt like a genius if you'd got it right. But the likelihood is you wouldn't have got it right. And in fact, you know, if you needed to be living on that money, you would have been wiping yourself out at a dramatic rate. And I think that's the interesting thing to me. You know, we talk about sort of good common sense principles, diversification. It sounds really boring. Don't market time. It sounds even more boring. But it's amazing how in the most sort of, I mean, I think there's a word that I'm really hating at the moment, you know, unprecedented, because everyone's talking about everything being unprecedented, but let's just say extraordinary times, following a real common sense basic principle of 60% in shares, 40% in bonds, don't change it, stay the course, be disciplined, would have come out with pretty much no losses by Friday, and you're in a position where you're when the market does drop, you don't drop nearly as much as what the stock market drops. And I think that's a really powerful lesson for people, is, you know, being fancy or trying to second guess what's going on doesn't work. And here we've got a live example, because, you know, I always look at David Shapiro. He's probably seen more market falls and rises than you and me combined. And, you know, he always kind of, you know, goes through these, like, same old principles, don't be too clever. And I think you'd be gloating now. He'd be saying the same thing, don't trade the market. And I think we're living it and watching probably a decade of market movements or 7 years worth of market movements in 5 months. And those principles are applying again.
Most certainly are. And again, I do question the value of active management in this time. I know we've spoken over many, many years about passive investment and Julia. By the way, she's still solvent. We must talk about her at some point and see whether...
I think we're due, you're right. It's June or July, isn't it?
July. Get connected with Julia, please. I'd love to catch up with her, because she's been such an inspiration for so many years to people, and I'd be curious to see what's happened to her. But I was going through my own finances the other day, and there's nothing that focuses the mind exactly just like that. And there was the catastrophe, of course, of the first quarter, where there was a destruction of value. And I was looking at a retirement annuity that I've got, and the overall market was down about 20%, and my retirement annuity was down about 15%. So I felt a bit smug about that. I thought to myself, well, that's pretty good. And then I look at the recovery that's happened in my little investment versus the recovery in the market in the top 40 index, and it's way outperformed. The recovery of the passive fund is dramatically outperformed the fancily managed fund. And you just go to yourself, hold on a second, have I not been paying attention for all of these years to all of the lessons that we talk about here on The Wireless?
And I think it is a valid point. You know, I think the South African market, unfortunately, when we talk about shares, you know, the number of shares that an active manager can buy nowadays is probably somewhere around 60. You know, for big retirement funds and the like. You know, we only have around about 300 shares, and unfortunately, a lot of them are very small, too small for retirement funds to buy. So when you look at their range of choice, it is quite limited, and then it does include, you know, the Sasols and the Naspers and the like, where you know, either the company's too big or the share price is too volatile with too many concerns. And so it's becoming more and more difficult for these active managers to deliver good returns in the South African market. So, you know the kind of the theory of you know, paying an active manager, I think, still applies to some extent overseas, where there is a lot more choice and many, many more companies to research and to find good value. But I feel, you know, if I did feel a lot for fund managers, I'd feel a bit sorry for them now in the South African market, because I think they can add value potentially moving between cash, bonds, property and shares, you know, with asset allocation. But then we're back to market timing, and I think that's a pretty futile exercise, as we've just spoken about. So I think you're right. You know, I think the days of the active managers are not gone in South Africa, but I think the days of easy returns for them are certainly gone. And then if you add all the, you know, the dodgy accounting that we've seen from companies far and wide in South Africa, you know, the auditing standards are leaving a lot to be desired. So I think it's become incredibly difficult for them. They've got a limited range of choice. And then secondly, it's extremely hard to trust the numbers that are being published by listed companies. And across the board, we've seen so many big issues on those kinds of big balance sheet problems that have been disguised from all of us that I think it's a tough game. And so I think you're right. I think, you know, being in a equity index in South Africa is still a good idea. I don't want to discourage people from being in shares in South Africa, but what I would say is spread your shares, you know, nicely across an index and try and get the fees down as low as possible, because that's probably your best chance of getting the returns now. You know, paying 1 or 1.5% a year to an equity fund manager in South Africa, where you know they've got a really limited range of choice, I think that's a tough sell for me for the next decade. You know,
but that's the point. I mean, the active managers are going to have to justify their existence considerably more in the future than they ever have had to before. And they've had a tough run. They really have. And there's some lovely people in the investment industry, some incredibly clever people. But you can't bet against an Aspers and a Prosus, for example. And if you're not overweight in those two things, you underperform. If you get too overweight and suddenly Donald Trump goes madder and, you know, China gets more towards Hong Kong, well, the game changes really quickly once again. And these so many thousands of variables in the life of an investment portfolio.
Exactly. And you know, and people are probably sitting now listening to us and saying, oh, what should we do now? And I think my answer is, you know, investment common sense is fairly easy to understand. It's fairly well broadcast all the time right here on this show. You know, you talk about it all the time. When we're on this slot, we talk about it all the time. I think it's difficult to follow simply because it is common sense. It is quite simple. And someone's always out selling a story about how amazing they are or why you should be particularly fearful or particularly greedy. And I think that's what derails investors now. So my answer is, you know, follow the basics. You know, have a good split of cash, bonds, property, shares, you know, have a good split between South Africa and overseas, and then don't become a victim of market timing. You know, if you need to put money into investments and you're in these kinds of market conditions where the Rand's swinging absolutely wildly and the JSE swinging wildly and Donald Trump's a factor and North Korea's back on the mix and China's, you know, starting their own version of a trade war with everybody else, then all you do is feed your money into investments over time, take 3 or 6 months to do it, and the same with overseas, and then stick to your guns. Don't chop and change, and just, you know, once a year or every 6 months, just get a rebalance between all your assets, your asset mix. But beyond that, you know, try not to be too fancy. You know, I think fancy in this market has cost people a heck of a lot of money, and the kind of the people that are happy just to, you know, do the basics and plod along, those are the ones that are actually making money, or, you know, when markets are losing money, at least they're losing the least. And I think, you know, often that's where the kind of the sage of Omaha, Warren Buffett, always says, you know, sometimes the best thing to do is not make losses or lose the least amount so that when markets recover, you're in the best position to participate in that recovery. And I feel that's what's going to happen here. We're going to be, you know, whether it's this year or next year, we'll be watching a recovery, you know, in South Africa and overseas. And you know, if you kind of stuck to your guns and plod along in a very simple, basic allocation, low costs, you know, you're in the position to benefit the most. And the people that have been timing markets and been really clever and had great stories to tell you over Zoom and Teams and whatever because you can't have dinner together, they're the ones that are probably losing out in these conditions.
So I've got a friend who somehow timed Sasol perfectly. Got in, got out, and has made an embarrassing amount of money through nothing other than somebody who said, get in now. And they timed it perfectly. And unfortunately, those sorts of stories are the ones that may very well influence us the next time something looks like a sitting duck. And that's also when mistakes happen too.
Well, you're right. And I remember, you know, sitting in Omaha watching Warren Buffett talk about this, and someone stood up and said, you know, my advisor called the last three market crashes correctly. And just before the market crashed, he told me to get out. He told me to get back in again, and he's done it successfully three times in a row. You know, what do you say about market timing? And Warren Buffett said, I'm not going to change what I'm saying about market timing, but what I am going to say is you should fire your advisor because he's flipped a coin and he's happened to call it heads correctly three times in a row, and potentially he's going to make you lose all your money one day. So what I think you should do is fire your advisor. And I think that's the advice here. Now, someone who's flipped a coin on calling Sasol at the bottom and selling it at the top, I think that's the deal. They have flipped a coin. They feel lucky. And now the problem is they're going to confuse luck with skill. You know, and suddenly they're going to believe that they're market trading geniuses. And one thing about the markets is it always humbles the geniuses. You know, and that's the point. When you think you've got this and you think you understand how everything's going to work, that's exactly when the market turns you on your head and humbles you again. So, you know, and that's the point about investment principles is, you know, they're simple. Even I can understand them. They're difficult to implement because you have to be humble and not kind of second guess the markets. You have to know you don't know, and you have to know you don't know better than the market.
Warren Ingram, personal financial advisor and executive director at Galileo Capital.